And you can tell by this white hair of mine that I've been around for a little while. Of course, I am an alcoholic. My name is Dick Green, but my hair didn't get that white overnight. And naturally, at my age, I couldn't look forward to a family. I had to get one already made. Because while I haven't lost all my bad habits, LAA had nothing to do about losing them, I'll tell you that. I get quite a kick out of the story they tell of this boy that was in AA for a while. You know, you get around 6 months or maybe a year, everything's beautiful, you know? That's all over. I'm not doing, that's not allowed to lead me into a drink, because straight and virtuous path for me. This boy had a year in back of him. He decided I've saved some money. I'm going out the coast. I'm going to take a nice long trip for myself. He got on a Pullman, got the best they had, and he started for the coast. Finally went up to the diner, right through the front. That whiskey didn't bother him any, or anybody in there. Had his dinner and came back to his private apartment. Opened the door, and there's two beautiful blondes in there. And he smiled sweetly as a young, enthusiastic AA would, virtuous and so forth, and said, I'm awfully sorry, but you found the wrong room. I said, oh, yes, just a moment. Here's my ticket. This is my room. This is... Yeah. Well, he said, where's your... So we don't have any tickets. But we know whose room it is. It's yours. And that's why we're here. He said, just a moment. Just a moment now. That's past. Alcohol is out of my life, and this wild woman running around is out of my life, and I'm leading a straight and narrow path now. Back for a minute. He says, you girls will have to make up your mind. One of you has to leave. That I'm in and walk in, just hell doesn't make any difference whether you leave or whether you stay. Oh well, I can still smoke cigarettes. In the good old days, I think it was wonderful. But I remember about that. They had a meeting one night in Washington. It's the truth, the young fellow in there. They couldn't get very many people to come to the meeting. The young people kind of splitting up and they wanted to start this and start that. So he sent out postcards to all the gang in Washington, D.C., and so we're going to have a meeting on sex. He had a full house. And he had some pretty good ideas about it, too. And I know that regardless of whether you're sober 24 hours or how long you're sober, it takes time to grow in the field, as it took your time to develop that disease called alcoholism. And there are days when, oh, you bet it's going to be rough. But I heard a fellow the other day say again, and I guess I've heard him say it 50 times. They'll say that this kind of a day you have. You say a good one? Good one, always. I've had a good day. And the only bad day that I ever have is the day that I take a drink. How true that is. The only bad day that he would ever have is the day that he takes a drink. And believe me, that's the only bad day that I'll have. Oh, yes, I've had my ups and downs, just like you have. And I'll continue to have them, because I have a disease called alcoholism. And I'm never going to conquer it. With all the help of all the AAs in the world, and every affiliate that's with them, they can never cure my alcoholism. So what I came into AA with, unfortunately, or fortunately, I'm going out with. Those weeds that grow in the garden, you know, you go out and take a lawnmower and you cut them down, and what do you know? They grow again. And what do you know? All these things that brought us into this world of alcoholism, don't ever forget that they can grow up again. And it's through your program of your 12 steps that you're fortunate to keep those things cut down, where you can recognize them and where you can do something about them, because
Too many people have come up with the excuse that I walked in and the first thing I knew, I took a drink. You never take a drink when you kick it up, you take it down here. When you let the weeds grow, when you take these curves that you're taking, and say, oh, well, after all, Joe does it and he gets away with it, so I guess I can too. What can you do without taking a drink? You better find out. I don't care who you are, whether it's Bill Russell, God bless him, or the boy that came into our program this morning. He's got to learn how far he can go. I remember a fellow testifying one time. They asked him how honest he was in his business, and he says, I'm as honest as my business allows me to be. How true that is. And we talk, and Pat's mentioned it. I remember how many times I said in my early days, if somebody had mentioned God when I came into AA, I would have gone out the door. That's a lot of hokum. You'd think that it was the first time that I ever heard it. My mother's maiden name was Nellie O'Rourke. And Hardy Green was my daddy. And you know, strange as it may seem, I heard it an awful lot of times at home. Over and over again. And Grandma, God bless her soul, I think she died with a rosary in her hand. And I want to tell you a little bit about Grandma, because you girls now are coming up to wintertime again, and I'm an authority on cold. You know that. Is your wife a fresh air fiend? Or, if she is, why, perhaps you can give her a little advice this morning. Because, you know, I've been awfully lucky. As far as colds are concerned, I don't have them. And it's easy to avoid. You just keep away from that night air. Don't you know any old Irish in your family at all that told you about the little men and that dampness in the air at night that creeps into you? That's where that consumption and those colds and everything come from. Grandma, God bless her soul, lived in a little town called Saco, Maine. I was reared in Lewiston, Maine. You never can tell that from my southern accent, I know, but... And I used to visit Grandma, and oh, we had an affinity. We loved each other. And Mother was tickled to death. I was 10, and I remember the first time that I had my deep love for Grandma. When Grandma went to bed, she dressed up. And in this little room of hers, she had one of those feather beds, plenty of blankets on it. That's 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And as she got in bed, when I was there, and she used to take care of this ordeal herself if I wasn't, she would have me mix her a hot toddy. You know, an ounce and a half of whiskey or two, a little sugar, and plenty of hot water, and put it next to the bed. And she'd sit. But Grandma was a good old Mick, you know. She never drank alone. She'd always say, mix one for yourself, Richard. Grandma's a little helper. And the first time I mixed one just the same for me as I did for Grandma. Grandma got in bed and I shut the door and she passed me the towel, so I put it down at the bottom of the door that keeps out that air from coming in under. Make sure that all the windows were locked. And I got in bed with Grandma, and I sipped my little toddy, and she sipped hers. She went to sleep, and I just passed out. And Grandma told me, she said, your mother now, God bless her, she's a wonderful woman, but she's always sick. And you know why, Richie? Did you ever see her nightgown that she goes to bed in? And I said, yes. Well, she said, that's the reason. All these women, there's something going wrong with this new generation. Because every generation, something's new going wrong with every one of them, you know? She says they undress when they go to bed and put on some flimsy little thing. And she says, up goes the window and that cold, damp night air comes creeping in. God forgive them, she said. Cold, pneumonia, consumption. And they could avoid it very easily. So you girls take a tip from Grandma. Grandma never had any bother at all. Anything that ever bothered Grandma, she used to tell me of her oldest daughter. I I never saw her. She died before I was come around the deal. Poor soul, she died of cancer. And Grandma's the only time I'd ever hear her shed a tear, because she'd tell me of her sickness, how long it was and how she suffered. And she'd close with, you know, she married a Protestant. So, that was Grandma. You know, isn't it wonderful that you can laugh at the stories of yesterday? On yourself. You know, when you can laugh at yourself, you're home. It's easy enough for me to laugh at some of the things that you've done and so forth. But digging up some of the things that happened to each one of us and be able to tell them, as my good pal Red over there tells some pretty tough things sometimes, some of it's very laughable. But it's awfully sad. And I've sat with Charlie many and many an hour. Awful rough, but we could laugh about it. And some of my own, too. Because they got on the same streetcar that I did, called alcoholism, and they rode it right plump to the end. Right to when it crashed and threw you up. Isn't it fortunate today in AA, all over this man's world, that men are getting on that streetcar and women are, too, and they're getting off down the line. They're finding a little AA here and a little AA there down the line in time before they make that final crash, or a long time before the crash comes. And they listen to old gray-headed men like myself, and they smile perhaps and say, oh, well, he couldn't stand another drunk. No. After all, it's so long since he's had a drink, he doesn't remember yesterday. If you're 24 hours old, I'll write your autobiography for you if you want to continue drinking. And if you continue drinking, you won't worry me a damn mite. You keep on going. That's your deal. Because if you're 24 hours old, you found AA. And you had the same chance as I had. And if your time has come that you've made up your mind that you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, as Pat says, you get off that streetcar. But if you don't, then I don't know the reason. And I'm not here to try to tell you, because I don't know. Regardless of my days in AA, I don't know the answers to them. Not to your kind of surprise. I have to look out for my own. For 24 hours or 24 years or 30 years, whatever it might be, you'll have to go on your own and work it out. But believe me, it's easier than the other way. So much easier than the other way. But it isn't easy. And sometimes we allow people to come in and sponsoring them and so forth and taking care of them as much as we know how. We make the mistake perhaps of letting them think it is too easy. That for us it was just a simple problem. We walked into AA at bingo. We were sober. Oh, I don't think so. In fact, for my own self, I'll answer, I know it wasn't that way. And I want to bring up how I found AA, because too many times I've heard deacons, such as myself and the gentleman over here that's become a deacon lately. You know how you rip those old-timers? You say you've been in there too long. You don't remember yesterday. Oh, yes, sure. We don't remember yesterday. Well, let me tell you. You can remember yesterday by just closing your eyes, if you wish to. And up you'll come with the results of yesterday and bring them right up on the table. Now, as Pat jumped around in her story, I'm going to jump around in mine. If you're ever up here someday, and I hope you are, you'll get a famous point all ready to bring out, and you'll sit there in expectancy, waiting for these great words to come out, and you'll forget what the hell you're talking about. Such as myself when I get going. But after all, somewhere down in anybody's story, keep listening, because in there is liable to be the answer for you when you get down in that hole so far some night or some day that you'll remember and pick it up. But as I said about deacons like myself and so forth, you're liable to think that, oh, I'm trying to impress my AA on you. No, sir, I'm living my AA the way I see it. You take care of yourself. Because I wouldn't give you 15 seconds of my AA. Because your AA is good. And if you're sober, it's wonderful. But your way of doing it might get you drunk. And if you do it my way, you're liable to get drunk. For every man and woman there are in AA today, there's that many opinions about your 12 steps. Even to the word God. This program wasn't put together for Christians. Exclusively. This program was put together for alcoholics. And many a man tonight, and many a woman, standing over this man's will, doesn't say God the way you say it. Or perhaps doesn't have a God of their own at all. And many a man that's come in here an atheist has changed. And some will say they have to do so and so. You don't have to do anything but stay sober and grow. That's your deal in AA. We're not here in the business of saving souls. Only God knows I've never seen a man or a woman yet that I have met that hasn't gone back to an understanding of his own faith or found the faith of his own in AA. And too many times I have said too, oh, he can't make it, or she can't make it, or you should go out and see if the wife called first or the husband. If the husband called, why, that's okay. But if the wife called, pay no attention to it. He doesn't want it. How fast you can play God in here is wonderful. You talk about elevating, getting a quart and be somebody, being here 2 weeks, and boy, you can just change the whole life of anybody. And I mean, you can change it too. But what you think about talking to somebody, if you believe in a power greater than yourself, whom I wish to call God, and what you call it is your business, don't bother mine and I won't bother yours, then whatever you say comes out of your heart in the willingness to help that man or woman. And whatever you say is not your words, but the words of the power that you have that's greater than yourself. Or we don't have anything in this deal. But we do have. There's no special way to go out to a man or a woman and bring them into AA. It's your way. Out of the goodness of your heart, or out of the happiness of your heart. If you want to help somebody in your 24 hours in AA, go out and do it your way. Whatever way you do is right if you're willing from your heart to help. If you're fortunate enough to walk into an AA club room or a club or a meeting, naturally you hear a lot of things. But getting the guy or the gal in, I know because I come into AA drunk, not looking for AA or sobriety, but merely looking for another drink. I'd never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous and cared less. I'd given up my life. I knew I was going to die a drunken bum, and that proved it, and proved it, and proved it. To my satisfaction, I wasn't born on a Bowery. I was born into a great family, and with all the education that a guy would want. But I lived in the Bowery, and I moved down there for one simple reason. I was no longer able to stay up in the world with the other people. I couldn't compete anymore. I didn't want to put a collar on. I wanted to get down where men didn't give a damn what I did, or women either, that lived the day at a time too, never knowing what tomorrow morning would bring. And I've seen men die. And I've seen them beaten to death and starved to death and die from alcoholism. And I've been left for dead myself. That didn't worry me. Because I knew it was going to happen to me. I'm standing in a corner in Washington one night, D.C. It was August 31st, 1941. And a pal of mine called me into going up to this mission house on Massachusetts Avenue to see a guy that used to be a director of a building and loan association I was manager of in Washington years before. I'm 42 years old at the time. And life meant nothing to me except get another bottle, to get drunk tonight, to go lie down someplace, to get up in the morning, to get another bottle, to get drunk enough to lie down to get up the next day again, if the day can. AA, as I told you, I'd never heard of. And I walked into a room just like yours that I call a canopy that God put on earth for men and women just like me. I found the man I was looking for. I got enough to buy a quart, 100% of what I went in there for, and I left. I hope the next day I will never see again, because sometime in the early morning, they ran away from me, figured I was crazy, and I was, and I threw my hope, my last convulsion. And sometime in that afternoon, this was the day of August 31st, in the afternoon that I awakened, was ordered to service the night before, that I was up at this mission house. That's what they told me it was. And I was up to see the president too, by the way, of this mission house, which I found later was Alcoholics Anonymous. An old speakeasy that I'd been in and out of, I don't know how many times, in years past. And about 5 o'clock that evening, covered with blood, which I had been before, nothing new. But this time, so sick I can't move. And this time, that same fear, that god-awful fear that I've been living with for years. I knew that if they picked me up on the streets of Washington that afternoon, what I'd have to go through in that jail, and how many convulsions I'd have to throw before either I died, and God help me, maybe I'd live again, because I'd thrown them in there before. And I happened to think of this place I was in the night before. This mission house. Two blocks from where I was. I could go up through the alley, hold on to the side of the houses until I reached this door. The guy that opened it, I hope, is in heaven tonight. I know he's in heaven. He did more AA work than any guy I ever saw in my life. And he opened the door and laughed and said, "I'm glad to see you. Boy, were you drunk last night." I thought, what in God's name is going on here? The man's crazy, of course, but so am I, so we're home. And he brought me in and he sat me on a chair. And he said, "Let me get you a drink." And I knew that he meant Coca-Cola or coffee, because they offered me a drink the night before and I thought they meant whiskey, and like a darn fool, I put my hand out and grabbed the Coca-Cola and started like that with it, like I started to shake. But I just said, "No thanks." And what tongue I had left to say it in. And I spent the rest of the night there. That is till 12 o'clock when they locked the place up. A fellow that knew me, God bless his soul, he died of a heart attack in Houston after 18 years of sobriety. He walked in, smiled, and said, "Where did you go last night?" I didn't even see him. I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I went to look around to see where you were, and you're gone. I was here last night." And I thought, well, he's crazy too. Poor soul. 6 weeks before, I sent him to a nut house over in Baltimore. Got a guy with an automobile to take him over. I was too sick and too drunk to go along with him. And there he was, standing in an AA club room, telling me he was looking for me the night before. He knew where I'd been, if he wanted to look for me. I thought, the chip was still on my shoulder. But I'm in the position that I'd take anything. He dug up a quarter. Got some millionaire that was in the club, I forget who it was. Automobiles were awfully scarce then, amongst our gang. But some millionaire in there had some kind of an old automobile, and he took me out, put me in the back seat, and held me. I mean, held me. Not like you'd hold a baby in your arms, but under the arm, and kept talking to me. "I know you can't believe this, Dick. I know it doesn't seem possible, and I don't know either, Dick. I've been here 6 weeks. And these guys, whatever they've got, I don't know. But he said they're sober. And believe me," he said, "I know the backgrounds of some of them. And I know your background and you know mine. Meet me in the morning, will you?" I didn't care what he said, how, it didn't make any difference. He took me down to what is known as a 15-cent flop house on 5th Street in Washington. Got me in, saw that I would lie down. And he left me. I made the night, got up the next morning, and sure enough, he was right in the spot that he said he'd be. said, the reason I didn't stay with you last night, I didn't have another 15 cents. As you know, my wife is vice president of a bank over in Virginia. And I went over this morning, and I've got money enough to do anything we want to do with. But I want you to get in a room, and let's bang around together for a couple of days. And I said, Bill, please don't bother with me, will you? I drank an awful lot of whiskey with you, and did a lot of tough things with you. But right now, I'd just soon be left alone, Bill. Because don't give me that corn. Take that up to that mission house. Bill, you know that people don't sober up. Oh, 2 weeks, 6 weeks. I said, you remind me of the story of the Irishman went down to the priest to take his pledge again, like Pat was talking about. And the priest says to him, well, how long do you want to take it for? And he says, oh, I usually take it for life. I figured they were on a pledge deal, too. But he wouldn't take that guff from me. And I was too weak to do anything about it. Now, the reason I bring it up is here, not to brag that I have a few years of sobriety, but to tell you and tell anybody else, anybody can stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't care what your color is, your background is, what your education is, your lack of it, or your need of it, or all the education in the world. It doesn't make any difference. If you want this bad enough, it's yours. Or you don't have a God of your understanding. Do you mean to tell me that the God of my understanding is going to pick you out and say you make it? But you won't. You will, but you won't. Not my God. My God gives every man 100% when he walks in him. But he's also got a mind of his own as a human being that he's got to use. And the want and the desire to come out of the trash that he's in and walk up again. And from therein, it's you. The greatest thing in the world in our deal is this therapy of you. What do you know about 12 steps, your first day, first month, first year, maybe? You're sitting mostly in a daze, as I did, wondering what they're talking about and perhaps caring less. But sober. Men around you, the example of the backgrounds that they've had, telling you their experiences, patting you on the back and saying you can do it. Therapy. Getting you defogged long enough so that you have something to think with and some desire and then that hope that maybe I can do what that guy did or that gal did. And you sustain me. You sustain every guy and gal that ever walked in here. On that hope and that therapy. And the day came that he began to get his understanding of what these 12 steps meant. You know, nothing in our 12 steps have you ever read where it says I. The personal pronoun I is not in our 12 steps. It's we. And should I lose you, I will be drunk. I couldn't stay sober by myself, but we can. And we're the luckiest people in the world. Oh, she said, yeah, she's glad she's an alcoholic. Fine. I'm glad I had the background and found what I found. By the grace of God. But without you, I wouldn't want anything. When Charlie called me the other night, I resigned from talking in AA now 864,000 times if I've resigned once. I think this malarkey of mine at my age is getting a little old edgy now. And I'm getting tired and old, too, to be riding 200, 300, and 400 miles. Now, hell with this AA. Let somebody else save them. I've waved the banner too long. Then I can come up and meet swell guys and gals like you, and I say, oh, well, what's the use? I wouldn't take $1 million for the trip. I've met some guys and gals again, as I have in practically every state of your union. Because I've been one of the fortunate guys. I'm not throwing it up. If you have a little trouble, a good God, some of the finest guys and gals I know had a tough time making this deal. Maybe we didn't know enough. Maybe they weren't sponsored right enough. I don't know. But how I stayed sober, certainly, a miracle I call Alcoholics Anonymous. Sure, I know how I stayed sober, and there you are, right in front of me. A perfect example. Because I haven't had a drink since the night I walked in there to bum that quad the next day. Lucky her. I'll just give you a few more minutes of my first year in AA, and then I'll quit you. Now, I know you don't have any trouble at all in Madison, like we, amongst AA. That's all out the window. But down in my clubs that I've been around and come from, some big stinker gets up and starts hollering about money. You don't know that's sacrilegious. Because they do it in churches, but you're not supposed to do it in AA. The idea. Remember when we used to drop it like that on the bar? Sure and all. You get an AA and you take out that bankroll and you look at it. Oh, I saw some stinkers do that in AA around my club in the first year I was there. It's something you're talking about. This is a spiritual program. Don't be talking about money. The Lord will provide. She said, the whole you provide. But in our club, why, we had some very, very deep things to discuss. I've been fortunate over the years to be a delegate to New York from my state, Mississippi. That's where I have spent most of my AA life, in the South. Which reminds me, it's not a bad story, it's just our governor down there. You've read about him. He's done some pretty tough things, I guess, and some awfully good things. I know him personally. And he's the first guy, businessman, in the state of Mississippi that ever walked into an AA meeting to see what we had and congratulate us and ask us what we could do. That was a long time before he was governor. But they tell the story that he died the other day. And he went to heaven. And he's so glad to think that he's at the front of the pearly gates, he doesn't know what to do. Happy. He lived a nice life, regardless of what had been happening in the past few months and couple of years. And he rapped on those pearly gates. And when he did, he heard a voice say, "Who dare?" And he walked away and said, "Oh, the hell was it?" You don't mind if I go back to my vice again, do you? Lord bless it. What would I do without cigarettes? Father, I tell a story in AA, and I think it's worth repeating. I don't think you get anything for nothing. I don't think you can sit down in the club and just say, "Isn't that wonderful?" and come back next month and maybe look it over again and just say, "It's fine." An Irishman and a Jewish boy on the east side of New York, and they had a tough time. They came from very poor families. But do you know those two guys were the greatest friends in the world? And do you know that both of them, through the public system in New York, provided themselves with an education by working hard? One became a priest and one became a rabbi. And one thing they never forgot, friendship. If one guy had a half a dollar, they had a half a dollar. If a guy got tickets to a show, we went to the show. And that's the way they lived, in the poor parishes that they had and the poor rabbis together. One evening, the Irishman called him up, and he'd always say, "Okay, Abe, I got tickets for the garden tonight. There's a swell fight down there. There's an Irishman going to beat his Jew's brains out. Okay? I want you to see it." "Oh," Abe said. "Okay. Mike, pick me up." They both went down to the garden. Preliminaries were over. As they sat there, the main about to start. And just as the bell rung, the little Mick dropped down to his knees and blessed himself and come tearing out. Rabbi hit Mike in the side and said, "Mike, do you think that'll help him?" Mike thought for a minute. He said, "Yes, I do. I think it'll help him. If he can fight." "I think it'll help you if you can fight. If you can fight for something new. If you can fight for some of the dreams of yesterday, of what you would like to have been. The guy that you would love to have been to the girl that you're with now. In the hope of tomorrow. If you have the guts, you can do it. As the rest of the gang have done it." So let me close by just saying something that I heard Pat say tonight. God must have been in an awfully happy mood when he made Wisconsin. It's beautiful. And when AA started, he must have been in a wonderful mood too. Because he graced it with some of the best guys and gals that I've met in a long time. And I hope that someday soon, Pat and I will see you again. Thank you.